Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the Minnesota National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing, and we'll learn about the VA's Veteran Justice Outreach Program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Tomorrow is Memorial Day, a day for us to pay tribute to the men and women who died in service to our country. Minnesotans have served and died in conflicts ranging from the Battle of Gettysburg to our present-day conflicts. And though Memorial Day is set aside to remember those who have died, it is also a day for us to honor their lives and their service. I encourage you to go out into your community tomorrow and attend an event sponsored by your local veterans organizations. Meet the veterans there and listen to their stories. Minnesota Military Radio is hosting a special 3-hour program Monday in honor of Memorial Day. If you're in the Twin Cities listening area, spend the morning with Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130 tomorrow from 6 to 9. Or if you're outside the area, listen to the podcast at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Most importantly on this Memorial Day, I want you to know that freedom is not free. Please take a moment from your picnics and barbecues this year to remember that many brave Americans died in order for us to live the lives we have in this great country.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing is the Commander, Colonel Jim Johnson. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you in the studio today, sir. I think last time you called in from the airport, you were on the way somewhere.
Right. I was making a connection on the way to recognize one of our members that was graduating from officer training school, and it was just a great event to be at, but unfortunately I had to call in from the telephone, but I appreciate your flexibility that day.
No, it was great, sir. Can you share with our listeners, how long have you been in the military?
I've been in the military over 28 years, coming up on 29 rather, this summer, and I've been... vast majority of that has been here with the Minnesota Air National Guard, over 20 years worth of service here.
And how long ago were you, did you take over for now General Hasse?
Right. It was almost 2 years ago. Time's really flown since that time, but it was August of 2013.
And sir, we want to talk about the capabilities and about the 133rd today, but you brought another officer with you. Who'd you bring?
Sure, Tom. We brought Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta with us. He's the commander of the 109th Airlift Squadron, and that's the squadron that flies or has the air crew assigned to it that flies in the aircraft. So all the pilots, navigators, loadmasters, et cetera, as well as many of the support personnel that are required to operate our airplanes.
Colonel Berta, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sir, how long have you been in the military?
Actually, today it's going to be 25 years today.
Congratulations.
Service, yes, thank you.
Does it seem like it went quick?
Oh, gosh, really fast. Unbelievable.
And has that all been with the Minnesota Air National Guard?
Actually, I spent a little bit of time. I actually got commissioned on ROTC up at UMD, Air Force ROTC, and then ended up in the Air Guard shortly thereafter at the Duluth unit, and then ended up in West Virginia and back in Minnesota. So I've been around a little bit.
Active duty Air Force and then the 133rd. That sounds familiar. I think I've done that. Colonel Johnson, can you just give our listeners a little brief? The 133rd Airlift Wing, you fly C-130s?
Yeah, that's correct. And we perform what's called a tactical airlift with our C-130s. And what do we mean by that? It's basically transporting people, equipment, or patients anywhere throughout the world. And the one thing that makes it tactical is that the C-130 particularly is designed to go into several austere remote landing strips and operate in areas that many other transport category aircraft cannot.
And Colonel Berta, I understand you have some medical transport as well.
That's correct. We one of the big parts of our mission, especially when we're deployed, is to do air medical evacuation. And it's a kind of a rewarding experience being able to help those folks out if you've got injured soldiers or what have you, people that are in need of medical attention, to be able to pull those folks out of the harm's way and back to safety and medical care.
I think we had someone on talking about that about a year ago, and they said that they were rotating back, so they're able to take a Minnesota soldier that was wounded all the way from Afghanistan to Germany and then back to Texas and then came home to Minnesota. So that's some pretty special care, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a great bridge that was available. That that particular time, we happened to have several of our Aeromed airmen deployed in the forward operating location, and we had some in Europe, and we had some back in the stateside. So it was a unique situation that time, but it is kind of fun to look at the possibility of having a Minnesota Aeromed person on part of that transport all the way back here to Minnesota.
We're speaking with Commander or Colonel Jim Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta from the Minnesota's 133rd Airlift Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel Johnson, I know that there's a difference between the Guard mission and the Reserve mission, because the Guard has federal and state duties and the Reserves have just federal duties. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah, that is correct. Like the active duty and the Reserve, the Guard has a federal mission, and that's to respond to the Department of Defense or the Department of the Air Force when called upon to do so. And so all three components have that part of the mission. The one thing that's unique about the Guard is that we also have a domestic homeland type mission, and that's to provide protection against the homeland, also protect life and limb if needed around the local community. And then lastly, if there's some type of a situation in which the local civilian authorities are overwhelmed or don't have that particular capability, they can then reach out to the Guard to help fill that gap.
And in that situation, then it's up to the governor to decide whether or not to activate the Guard to help with the local emergencies.
That is correct. And so he has to make that call, and then there's a process in place in which then he reaches out to the Guard to help out with that situation.
Colonel Berta, here in Minnesota, we've got one of the best training bases in the United States, from what I'm told, up at Camp Ripley. Does the 133rd make good use of that facility as well?
Absolutely, Tom. We regularly visit the Camp Ripley complex. It provides us with a tremendous amount of opportunity to train. We've got two drop zones on the complex that we do multiple airdrops on all year long. The airfield itself is a very good airfield for our operations, and it actually has a unimproved dirt assault zone, which is a key component of what we do. Where we're able to land on it's a gravel strip, and it's only 3,500 feet long, but it provides us with valuable training, because we do that often if we're deployed, going into short, unimproved airfields.
Sounds like some of those airfields I was taking off and landing on over in Vietnam many, many years ago.
Could be, yes.
Colonel Johnson, for those that might not understand, the C-130 is like a big flying tank, but you can open up the back doors of it and you can actually airdrop out supplies. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. One thing that makes the C-130 so versatile is not only can it operate in and out of a small landing strips like Colonel Berta just mentioned, but it also can be reconfigured to deliver all types of cargo, and all without getting any external support. So we can fly from point A to point B and haul 80 passengers or paratroopers, and then offload them or airdrop them, and then land at a place, and then upload all kinds of vehicles or cargo equipment, and the airplane can be reconfigured to do that.
So it's quite a versatile aircraft, and in demand, I would guess, all over the place.
It is. We're probably one of the first ones in when a lot of the stuff's happened, you know, in the early 2000s, and we're still one of the highest types of missions that are being asked for over in the theater right now, as well as domestically.
Colonel, you think they'll ever replace that aircraft with another version?
Well, they have a newer C-130, but the C-130 itself, I think, is tried and true. They have a newer version than the one we are flying right now, and there's been some talk about a new tactical airlifter down the road sometime, but boy, that C-130 has been filling that bill for quite some time. So we hope to recapitalize and or modernize our aircraft, but I think the C-130 itself is a tried and true delivery vehicle.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about just that topic, the recapitalization and modernization of the 133rd's Airlift Wing C-130s. We're speaking to Colonel Jim Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking with Colonel Jim Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta from the Minnesota National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing. And Colonel Johnson, can you just tell us once again the mission of the Minnesota Air National Guard?
Sure, Tom. It's tactical airlift, delivering people, equipment, and patients throughout the world.
and sometimes called up for federal duty and available to be called up for state duty.
Right, yeah, we have the responsibility and certainly the capability to respond in both of those capacities.
Now, Colonel, you were telling me off the air that you're flying the C-130s, and they're an H-class?
Yeah, that's right, Tom. There's two types of C-130s currently in the inventory, J models, which are the newest ones, and then the H models. And we're flying the H models. And so there's about 100 J models and about 250 H models still out in the inventory. And so they range from about 15 to over 40 years old.
So the useful life of an H model C-130 is 40 some years?
It can be. It needs a lot of updates and other modernization efforts along the way, but it can be in excess of 40 years.
Now, I understand you have a plan to recapitalize and modernize your C-130s so that they stay active and in good shape.
Right. The H models have two problems, so to speak, as far as longevity. We have what I would call like an intermediate term challenge in the next 5 to 10 years, where there's going to be some obsolescence coming on board. So we're working real hard as a guard-wide community, all the H models, C-130 units, to ensure that those airplanes are modernized to the extent that they don't become obsolete and they maintain the most current and up-to-date avionics and structural improvements that are needed to do the job.
Now, is that something you have to work with the Pentagon or the Guard Bureau at the Pentagon on?
Yes. We get our funding through the Air Force, and the National Guard Bureau is certainly part of that. And we work quite closely, or obviously Congress is involved with the allocation and appropriation of those funds. So we've been working to try and inform all of those agencies what we think are the most cost-effective measures to do that. And we've gotten real successful lately to come up with some good plans ahead, because we do know that the budget situation probably is not going to get any better down the road. So we're looking for the most cost-effective and quickest way in order to modernize our airplanes.
Now, Colonel, how do your aircraft compare to the rest of them around the country? Are you deployed more often? Seems like Minnesota Army National Guard is deployed more often than they might be for a state our size. Is the same thing true with the Minnesota Air National Guard?
Well, I think, Tom, as far as our task deployments from the federal side of the house, they do try and rotate that. We tend to be asked at least as often, if not more so, than our counterparts. But we also actively participate in other deployment opportunities for training and exercises, et cetera, because I think it's vital to our readiness. And so we are gone probably more than the average C-130 unit.
And Colonel Berta, when the air side of the house, the Air National Guard, goes out, they seem to go out more frequently, smaller groups, and shorter duration than the Army?
Yes, that's correct. Usually our deployments are on average length about 60 days in country, and then we typically are more often deployed. And we're in a deployment cycle with the rest of the units throughout the country. But we go more often, but it is a shorter period of time.
Now, I get these questions once in a while from civilians. Is there any possibility, is there anyone in a 109th Airlift Squadron that doesn't realize they're going to be deployed?
Probably not, unless they haven't been listening.
So everybody there knows, and they knew when they signed up, that there's deployments coming, they're going to be gone. And
that's correct.
They've accepted this and signed up willingly.
Yes, we put forth an expectations and make them clearly understand what they're going to be getting into, so they know that they're going to be deployed and doing those types of things all over the world. So,
now, Colonel Johnson, your aircraft seems like they're on the go all the time. If you don't get approval for parts and for your recapitalization and modernization, what's that going to do to your readiness status?
Well, it can be a big challenge. In the long term, if our planes become obsolete, we might not be relevant and able to be called upon to answer the call of the nation or the community. But really the most pressing need are some air traffic control restrictions that we see coming up within the next 5 years. And so the FAA and then the international counterpart to the FAA have some restrictions that have deadlines in the year 2020. And so we certainly need to have specific upgrades done in that time in order for us to operate in that airspace without any significant restrictions. what the main part of that, those upgrades include, currently the air traffic control system utilizes radar, and that's a very dated technology and certainly not as accurate as what some of the technologies are out there right now. And so the FAA, as well as the ICAO, the international counterpart to the FAA, are transitioning to a GPS-based position locating system. So we know, or they know exactly where the airplanes are in a three-dimensional and four-dimensional, if you include the time travel involved. They know much more precisely where those aircraft are, and that allows them to handle more aircraft with the increased congestion that's out there, and also remain a better buffer for safety as well.
So that upgrade's got to be made across the National Guard nationwide in order to be able to accommodate the.
That's correct, Tom. And one might think that 5 years is a long ways away, but when you talk about programming and appropriations and systems, et cetera, that's going to take quite a long time.
We're speaking with Colonel Jim Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta from the Minnesota National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel Berta, I understand that you had a deployment recently to Italy.
Yes, it was quite an experience. We sent two airplanes, three crews, about 33 people from the squadron and also a few people from the wing to Italy for about a month.
And what was the purpose of that mission?
We were supporting a joint multi-readiness training center in Germany. We were operating out of Italy just because the airspace was a little easier to operate out of. But we were doing airdrops in Germany. We did several airdrops in Italy, and we also did airdrops down in Crete as well.
Well, Colonel, that's got to be some great training to go out and train with your international partners.
It is essential, Tom, and that's why we spend maybe a little more time and money to do that than other units might choose to do. But we are called upon, and we have seen in real-world situations within the last year where we get unexpected taskings. And I'm not saying we weren't prepared for them. We were prepared, but we just weren't expecting them, yet we were ready to do that. And so this kind of training that we took advantage of last month provided invaluable experience to our air crews that were able to take part in that.
And Colonel Berta, when these missions come up, and it seems like they come up frequently, even though they're short, you start by posting it and looking for volunteers, or do they get voluntold?
No, it's a volunteer type of thing, because we really want the people who desire to go and experience that and get that training. However, we do temper that with people that we know need to get that experience as well. We don't want to just have all the old people go. We want some of the young folks to get that experience because they're the next generation. And this particular mission was fantastic. We ended up going down to Crete, and we were dropping the Greeks, British, and Americans. And we were the first Americans to ever drop on the island of Crete. So that was a pretty good experience.
That had to be just fascinating.
It was awesome.
Colonel Berta, one last question. How's your staffing in the 109th Airlift Squadron?
We've got a robust staff. We're always trying to keep ourselves ahead of the curve. It's a challenge at times to make sure that we've got all the qualified individuals. It's good. We're always looking for additional people that are interested in flying airplanes. And we welcome everyone with open arms, and we want that great young generation to come out and try to see if they could be a part of the Minnesota Air National Guard.
You always got some older people retiring, and you got to fill back in with the young ones that
yep.
are ready to go.
That's right.
Colonel, how about across the airlift wing? Is your staffing pretty well?
Yeah, same situation. We're blessed with a robust staffing and a great retention. It means people love to stay on board once they're in the unit. But we're continually looking, you know, for diverse and developing airmen who are able to respond to our mission and adapt to the needs out there. So we're always actively recruiting out in the workplace.
Colonel Johnson, we've got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I just want to say a word of thanks to the employers. This morning I had the privilege to talk with our employers of several of our guardsmen to the civilian employers that make those sacrifices when we go out and do these deployments, these training events, et cetera. And that comes at a cost to both our service members' family and to their employers. And today we're able to thank them with a breakfast and some orientation to the mission at the 133rd. But in general, to all employers of military members out there, we thank you for your sacrifices and enabling our folks to do what they need to do when called upon.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
This is Colonel Jim Johnson and Lieutenant Colonel Andy Berta from the Minnesota Air National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment to learn about the VA's Veterans Justice Outreach Program.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the VA's Veteran Justice Outreach Program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
Memorial Day is a time to honor the memory and service of all veterans and military who have given their lives in the service of this country. No greater sacrifice could ever be asked of an individual. The service of these veterans has impacted the life of every single citizen in this great nation. It is for that sacrifice that I salute our fallen comrades. Across the generations and across the centuries, Americans have answered the call to duty, and many paid the ultimate price. We can't even begin to contemplate the world today had men and women we honor on Memorial Day not stood fast against our enemies throughout history. It is never over. Missions may end, but the legacies left and the pain of their absence endures. This Memorial Day, let us remember.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is David Holowinski, who is a mental health clinical social worker and a Veterans Justice Outreach Specialist from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. David, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
That was kind of a mouthful. That's a big title, isn't it?
It is.
Tell me, what kind of training did you take and what kind of college courses did you take to get into this field?
Sure. So I'm a clinical social worker. Got my undergrad and graduate degree at the University of St. Thomas. Focused on a lot of the behavioral health, lifespan development, and the various psychological profiling and things of that nature.
And how did you end up at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Medical Center?
So I was working in the community before at an inpatient drug and alcohol treatment program, and I got offered an opportunity to apply for a job at the VA. I was asked to apply and did and got selected and have been there now going on almost 8 years.
And did you have an interest in helping veterans? How did you get interested in that?
I did. So my family, sibling, everyone else is part of the military family, and I just have not been able to get in connected with it, and I had a passion for working with it, and
so when you started. When you started 8 years ago at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, were you immediately put into the Veterans Justice Outreach Program?
No, I started in our intensive outpatient drug and alcohol treatment program, was there briefly for about 2-3 years running that program, transitioned to our mental health unit, and from there got promoted into the Veterans Justice Program in December of 2010, so just over 4 years.
So when you first started, though, you were helping veterans that were having some drug and alcohol issues, those type of things?
Yep, PTSD in the mental health unit, primarily all related with substance use in some capacity.
Now, is that all interrelated? We used to call it combat fatigue. Now it's post-traumatic stress and and alcohol and drugs. And are they all running away from something?
Co-occurring disorders, yep. It's hard to know the chicken and the egg, but that's what we try to sort out of what to treat and how to treat both simultaneously.
Now, David, I'm told that as opposed to 45, 43 years ago when I came back from Vietnam, they didn't know too much about how to help the guys. But I'm told now that the VA Medical Center all across the country, they know how to deal with PTSD. Is that true?
Absolutely. So the VA is now using three of the most evidence-based or most helpful treatment programs, EMDR, cognitive processing therapy, and prolonged exposure. And we also have inpatient PTSD treatment programs now as well.
So if the veterans go out there and they want to get better, you know how to help them.
Absolutely. But they have to want that help.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
That is.
Now tell me about the Veterans Justice Outreach Program that has to be part of this Veterans Court Program.
Yes. So the Veterans Justice Outreach Program actually started technically in 2009. It was a mandate out of Washington as part of the national movement to end homelessness in the veteran population. We fall under the prevention aspect of homelessness, knowing that folks who are homeless tended to be incarcerated or in jails or have legal issues. which was why they were homeless. And so they brought us in to help work with veterans courts and veterans in jails and law enforcement education. So those are our three main goals. And so we in that process, we started doing the veterans courts, and now they're up and running all nationally across the country.
Okay, let's talk about the veterans courts here in Minnesota. How many of them are there now?
So there are seven in Minnesota, primarily here in the metro. We have Anoka, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington County, along with Carver. We have one down in the Blue Earth County area in Mankato, in the 5th Judicial District. That's a regional court. And then the Becker Clay County Court just opened up as well.
And it's my understanding that when they established the veterans courts, everyone in the veterans courts, the judge, the prosecutor, the defense, they're all veterans?
Most of them are all veterans, yes. Or there's a passion for working with veterans. In all the courts, I believe over half the courts, the judge themselves is a veteran.
Now, I think there's a misconception, the whole concept of veterans courts. We're not doing anything special for these veterans.
Nothing out of the ordinary we wouldn't in a normal capacity with the legal system or in treatment. It's actually a more intensive program to go into the veterans court than the normal court process.
So they get some benefit if they elect to go to the veterans court and go through the process, but it's actually more cumbersome, longer, harder.
Correct.
They're not getting any gifts.
They are not. They are signing up for a minimum of 12 months, somewhere sometimes as long as 3 years, even 4 years. We've had veterans in some of the courts doing intensive case management, intensive probation. They're doing inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment, a lot of assessments, and coming to court on a regular basis. So much easier than going to the court, pleading I'm guilty, serving 30 days with good time, it's only 20, and being back on the road. So
we're speaking with David Holowinski from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center about the Veterans Justice Outreach Program here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. So, David, let's just go through a hypothetical. We've got a veteran, maybe he's got some PTSD problems, and maybe he goes out to a saloon somewhere and he gets drunk and he gets picked up on a DUI. He can just go through the normal court system and pay his fines and go to jail and do whatever he has to do, or he could elect to be taken care of through the veterans courts. Walk us through that. What would happen then?
Sure. So for the counties where veterans courts exist, if the DUI is there, the veteran on his first appearance would disclose to the judge that they are a veteran and they're wanting access and are interested in going through the court. Typically at that point, a referral from the court will come directly to me. I will bring the veteran into the VA and meet with them face to face, do some mental health testing, evaluation, explore what kind of treatment needs are there and hook the veteran up with that. And then I will be in court with them at every court appearance in the veterans court, updating the court about their progress moving forward.
So you help them get into the appropriate program and then you monitor their progress and make sure that they're doing the work they need to do.
Absolutely. In a sense, almost like probation from a treatment standpoint.
Now, if they go through all of that, maybe it's a year or 2 years, whatever it takes, what's the result of that? Is their record expunged or what happens?
Could be a lot of things. So in most cases, the courts are doing either stay of adjudications or stay of impositions where the case may be dismissed and it may never even hit their criminal record. It would kind of be what they call a pocket plea. In other cases, for the more serious offenses, it will show as a dismissal. We've been able to expunge cases at the time of graduation from the courts. It really varies what kind of negotiations happen with the prosecutor.
Well, this sounds like it really comes down to a choice. They can take kind of the easy way and do the jail time and it's on their record, or they can do some hard work and try to get cured and try to make sure it doesn't happen again and come out of it smelling a little better.
They could. It may not be smelling completely clean, but it would be better than the normal option.
So how long have you been doing this work with the veterans courts then? Has that just been the last few years?
Yep. So they started in 2010 here in Minnesota, and I started in December of 2010 when I got hired and have been working in all the courts, helped set up the Ramsey County, was a part of the Washington County, Anoka County, Blue Earth County, created the policies, procedures.
And if our listeners are interested, they can find more information at va.gov?
va.gov, or if you're a Google fan, you can just Google Veterans Justice Outreach. It'll pull you right to the page with all of our names, emails, and contact information.
Now, have a lot of veterans gone through this program with you?
So just looking at Hennepin County, they're approaching their five-year anniversary. They've had over 500 referrals go hit their court. They've had over 350 individuals go through their court already in 5 years.
Now, out of those 500, there must be some of them that get partway through it and say, this is too much, and drop off and go do their time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The veteran can elect to withdraw from the court at any point, but the only way out of the court is by going through the jail.
So would you say the program is working well for our veterans?
It is. So Hennepin County will be publishing the five-year study because we don't have a lot of longitudinal data. The data is just being released and coming out nationally. Their recidivism rate is well below the national average for regular treatment courts, drug court, mental health court, things of that nature, and definitely way below the national average of recidivism when a veteran or when an individual doesn't go through any type of treatment court.
Very good. David, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about a couple of case studies and see what's the future of the veteran courts. We're speaking with David Holowinski from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, talking about Veterans Justice Outreach. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with David Holowinski, who is a mental health clinical social worker with the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, and specializes in veterans justice outreach. And we've been talking about the veterans courts and the system that's out there to help veterans get through some potential problems that they have. And is there a range of problems, David, that come up, or are certain things come up over and over?
Yeah, traumatic brain injury, PTSD, substance use, pretty much any mental health condition are the main themes we see.
And they cause the guys to get in some kind of scrape with the law.
DUIs, domestics, terroristic threats, defensive driving, all different kinds of charges.
Sounds like anger management issues to me.
101, yes.
101, okay. And you said there's 8 veterans courts now, and if they take in a veteran or a veteran elects to go through the veterans courts as really a tougher solution than just taking his medicine, then they give a referral to you, and then you find the appropriate program for them to get into, and you monitor them and make sure that they participate fully and try to get them healed so that this doesn't happen again.
Exactly, and a lot of veterans are afraid to ask for help or don't want to ask for help, so this is another way to try to do that outreach to them to get them connected.
Now, can you give us an example, like a case study? How does this work?
Yeah, so I have a few veterans. I'm going to pick one in particular who came in through the court, successfully graduated. He had been struggling with a DWI, excessive drinking. Well, he came into the court. We put him into treatment. He successfully completed inpatient treatment as well as some intensive outpatient programming, did long-term individual therapy, and we got him connected with employment. He had been studying law enforcement and actually is employed full-time working in counterterrorism movement here in Minnesota, really looking forward to maintaining his career. He's engaged, he's sober, and he's starting to repair those relationships that he had damaged years ago. And he's just been really successful, and we actually have another individual who, to kind of put it into even greater perspective, had been homeless living in Bayfield, Wisconsin, in and out of a shed or a shack that had no water or electricity, would get down here for his court sessions actively using meth. And he's housed, he graduated, he's employed. His kids came to his graduation. He hadn't seen his kids for almost 8 years prior to graduation, and he's doing wonderful. So
put his family life back together.
Absolutely. It's more than just resolving the legal issues.
That's got to make you feel really good when you help somebody get it all turned around like that.
It does. And as a mental health person, usually we see folks in crisis. So I love my job, being able to see the happiness come at the end.
We're speaking with David Holowinski from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center about the Veterans Justice Outreach Program. So, David, this is relatively young, veterans courts and all these things that are happening. You told me that there's a five-year study coming out and the recidivism rate is low, so that means it's working. What's the future of the veterans courts? What's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I know we definitely want to see more courts get created here in Minnesota. We're looking for any county that does not have one right now. We've been working with St. Louis County, Stearns and Wright County, and even other counties here in the metro. So hopefully they continue to expand. And if not, hopefully there's some collaboration within the state that will fund these courts that can offer every veteran in every county access to these courts. So that's what we're hoping nationally. We now In the U.S., we have over 280 veterans treatment courts up and running nationally.
So the system is working.
It is working, or they wouldn't keep growing.
But it takes a commitment on behalf of the veteran. They've got to want to get healed, and they've got to want to pay the price and do the work.
Absolutely. And we as a community need to provide that opportunity for them.
David, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about the veterans courts or about what you do to help them?
You know, it's as you alluded to, it's really for veterans who are wanting that second chance where their military experience may have exacerbated some of these other symptoms. And while they may want to continue to drink and may be struggling with PTSD, there are other folks who have been through that. And we're here to help them get back on track. And sometimes they just need that support and guidance, particularly through the mentors. I failed to mention each court has a veteran mentor program, and it's basically a vet-to-vet, peer-to-peer relationship to get them grounded and back in the world.
And we can find more information on this at va.gov or?
Or Google Veterans Justice Outreach.
And lots of information available out there. And any of veterans that are having some trouble, check it out. It's a good way to get on the right path in life.
That's correct.
David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
That was David Holowinski from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System talking about the Veterans Justice Outreach Program. Joining me now is David Anderson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. David, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. How are you today?
We're doing real well, and glad to see spring here, and we're off and rolling.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, it's been a little bit cool up this way, but you know, hopefully we'll get some of that nice warm spring weather out.
Well, it'll get to you a little bit later than us, but it's on the way, David. You're good.
Okay, good. Well, that's good to hear.
Today we wanted to talk about VA healthcare. So if you're an honorably discharged veteran, you can get VA healthcare, but who is eligible and how does it work?
Well, if you served active duty military and were separated under any other condition other than dishonorable, now, some of the other than honorable discharges are going to have to be looked at, and they're always on a case-by-case basis. But any current or former members of the Reserves or National Guards who were called active duty by a federal order and completed the full period for which they were ordered to active duty may also be eligible. But reservists or guard members with active duty for training purposes do not meet the basic eligibility requirements. So if you're a newly discharged National Guard member or reservist, and you've been to Iraq or Afghanistan, you know, you've been called to federal duty for that, then you would be eligible.
So, David, if you're not established as a certain percentage disqualified, are you still eligible for VA health care, but you have to pay for it then?
Well, you're eligible for VA health care if you're 0% service-connected for any service-connected disability. Say you've got a shoulder that's 0% service-connected. You'd be eligible for only health care for that shoulder. Now, if you're a 10% service-connected veteran, then at that point, a 10% service-connected veteran would it takes out any time restrictions, i.e. National Guard that were only active for training, or anyone that doesn't meet the threshold guidelines for VA care.
So then there's current income guidelines that establish what you pay?
Yes, there is current income guidelines. For a single veteran, which would be put in priority group 8, as long as they make less than $35,175, or a married veteran making less than $42,212, they would be eligible for the VA healthcare system. If they're over that and they don't have any service-connected disabilities or anything like that, they would not be eligible until a point where their income would come down below that. Now, recently the VA has done away with asset restrictions. So if you were a farmer and you owned, you know, 320 acres that was valued at, you know, maybe $500,000, but you only made $17,000 a year, a while ago you would not have been eligible. But now the VA has got rid of that criteria, so now they're only using income. But the as long as you're below those income guidelines, you'll be put in priority group 8, which is that group that a majority of veterans end up going into. Now, if you're service-connected or you have, you're a prisoner of war or you've had Agent Orange exposure, then there is different groups for that.
So, and once again, the key there is going to be go find your county veteran service officer, find out if you're eligible for VA health care if you need it, and they'll help you work through the current income guidelines and tell you what it might cost.
Exactly. You're exactly 100% right, Tom.
Well, David, thanks for joining us again today.
Well, thank you, Tom, and I appreciate all you guys do for the veterans in Minnesota.
Thank you. That was David Anderson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Jim Johnson, Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Berta, David Holowinski, David Anderson, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to a local Navy veteran of World War II about D-Day and learn about the VA claims system with Rolando Sotolongo. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.